Here at Blueprint for Living, we don't just content ourselves with asking about the what of things. We like to get to the why and all the knotty questions that live under the surface. So it's always fun to talk to someone who's applied a different kind of lens to one of our areas of inquiry. Michael Marder is a professor of philosophy at the University of the Basque Country in Spain, and he's also the author of a number of books, including The Philosopher's Plant, An Intellectual Herbarium, and Through Vegetal Being, Two Philosophical Perspectives. And he joins us to talk about the relationship between the world of philosophy and the world of plants. Thanks so much for joining us, Michael.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about that link between plants and philosophies. To begin with, how did the first philosophers perceive the plant world?
Well, they actually perceived the plant world as rather poor and deficient in comparison to animals. So here I particularly am thinking of Aristotle, who thought that vegetal life, the life of plants, is undeveloped, is very rudimentary, as it were. Plants were perceived as immobile and insensitive. They were described in all of these negative ways, and compared to them, animal and human lives were apparently much richer and much more welcoming for complexity, diversity, flexibility.
So given that Aristotle had this kind of skeptical approach to the plant world, how did he write about it? In what way were plants worthy even of his consideration?
Well, at the same time, Aristotle did recognize something very important. He recognized that even though plants lived in this rudimentary way, they were alive, and so they were the basis of all vitality. What he called the vegetal soul, the threpticon, was, according to him, shared by all living beings. And that consisted in two capacities: the capacity to obtain nourishment on the one hand, to find food and keep oneself alive that way, and the capacity for procreation. And so these two basic capacities that Aristotle considered vegetal or plant-like were shared by all living beings, including humans, and became the basis for vitality, for any kind of life.
So that question about trying to understand the nature of life and existence and the relationship between sentience and living must have meant that plants presented something of a conundrum to Aristotle and his peers.
Yes, absolutely. And that conundrum, that kind of paradoxical nature of plant life, survived through centuries in philosophy. So plants were understood as something that is alive but not mobile and not sentient. They were understood as a kind of missing link, as an intermediary link between the organic world of animals and humans and the inorganic world of minerals. And they occupied this uncomfortable in-between position with a kind of strange mystery that surrounded them for millennia in Western philosophy.
Was there, I mean, amongst Aristotle and his peers, was there also a kind of understanding that plants and the natural world were the domain of the sciences, that this was a kind of turf war is probably too strong a way to put it, but was this someone else's territory altogether?
Well, in the times of Aristotle, there was not a very strong division between philosophy and science. So Aristotle wrote a number of treatises that could have been written by what we would call today physicists on the nature of color, for instance. He studied the parts of animals. In fact, one of his books is titled Parts of Animals. So he studied anatomy, for instance. So there was not really a very strong distinction between philosophy and science. That appeared, I would say, much later, especially in 18th, 19th century fields of philosophy and science. And that is when philosophers withdrew altogether from discussions of vegetal life, of plant life, because they understood that this is something better left to botanists. But I beg to differ for my part on that withdrawal of philosophy from thinking about plants.
Why so?
Well, because scientists can certainly study various processes that are vital to plants, but to have a big picture of what a plant is and what it's capable of its mode of living in the world, you need a supplement to science. And that supplement, I would argue, is philosophy.
Talk to me about some of those recent developments that, from your perspective, broaden the kind of philosophical considerations of the plant and the vegetable matter.
Well, yes, we talked about a little bit earlier about the so-called turf wars or possible turf wars between philosophy and science. Now what I see happening is a possible turf war within plant science itself. So that there is a group of scientists who are willing to consider plants to be intelligent beings, to be beings with their own kind of knowledge, their way of remembering events, of learning, and so on. And this group of plant intelligence scientists are a little bit under attack by their more traditionally minded colleagues who do not wish to allow for this idea that plants are intelligent beings. And I think this is where philosophy can make its contribution by arguing for either side. I mean, I find myself on the side of the plant intelligence people, but conceivably you could have a philosopher argue for the other side, the more traditional argument that plants are not intelligent beings, they are just almost mechanically responding to environmental factors around them.
Michael, I'm so glad you were willing to have your colours staked to the mast there and we know what side of the debate you're on. I'm just curious, why is intelligence the only marker for, or is that the only marker, or is that just a crucial distinguishing factor between whether we should be applying a kind of ethical framework to the way we regard plants or not?
Well, it would be an important marker, but even if you are willing to think about sentience, very often when I have debates with my friends in animal studies or philosophers who are thinking about animal life or who are trying to provide a philosophical justification for veganism, for instance, for them sentience is the absolute baseline for the moral or ethical consideration of living beings. But traditionally, plants have been excluded from the category of sentient beings. And I think what is exciting is that contemporary plant science allows us to appreciate all the wonderful and multifaceted ways in which plants are actually sentient. Perhaps even more so than we are, because they are capable of registering many more environmental factors, many more light waves, for instance, that they receive from the environment. And if you think about it, this kind of sentience, even heightened sentience of plants, is crucial for their survival, because they are, in a sense, chained to a place. They cannot escape from a danger by running away from it. And so it's even more important for them to be able to assess what is going on around them in order to respond appropriately to any threats or potential rewards such as moisture or minerals in the subsoil in order to thrive.
So as science's understanding about the kind of mechanisms of the plant world evolves, is there a parallel kind of shifting in the understanding of the nature of sentience going on? Or is this something that's always up to debate? You know, how much are plants intelligent beings and how much are they just responsive at a level that kind of precedes intelligence?
Yes, absolutely. I think that there is a shift, perhaps not so much in the category of sentience as in that of intelligence itself. In general, when the association we get with the idea of intelligence is IQ tests, a very abstract way of thinking that we humans have honed for ourselves. But in order to see the big picture, as I said, we perhaps need to decenter a little bit from our human categories, including intelligence. Of course, neither plants nor animals are intelligent in this way in which we consider ourselves intelligent. They are not mathematicians. They cannot count. They cannot conduct any complex sort of abstract cogitation. But if you think about intelligence as a kind of tool at one's disposal, a tool that allows one to adjust and to fit oneself better to one's milieu in order to thrive within that milieu, then certainly all living beings are intelligent in their own way. Of course, I do not want to mix the idea of plant intelligence with animal intelligence, with human intelligence, but that is precisely the idea, that every living being has to adjust itself to its singular, particular milieu, its environment.
Michael, what's the upshot of this level of philosophical inquiry? I mean, are we supposed to take from this that we need to re-examine our relationship with the plant world? Are we one step away from campaigners for vegetable rights, kind of storming the barricades and telling us to leave those carrots alone?
Right. You can certainly put it that way. I would not say that it is that dramatic, even though I have written a little bit on this idea of plant rights. But certainly one of the things that we would reassess based on these newly discovered capacities of plants and the idea that plants are intelligent beings is the way in which we're treating them. Of course, we cannot desist from consuming plants in our diets because we cannot survive on merely inorganic matter. But we can make our ways of treating plants more ethical, more respectful, insofar as we would refuse to instrumentalize them entirely. Right now, if we consider plants to be insentient and non-intelligent, we are treating them no better than inanimate things, inanimate objects, without any sort of respect for their inherent capacities. But if we acknowledge those capacities, then we can enshrine ethical ways of behaving, and even in our legal systems. To give you just one example, going back to Aristotle, the reproductive capacity of plants was considered to be a cornerstone of all life and a cornerstone of plant life in particular. So if we respect that capacity, then something that could be legally enshrined is the idea that you cannot produce sterile seeds, seeds that are incapable of reproducing themselves, which is what has been happening with the commercial agribusiness nowadays. And so this sort of robbery, this sort of theft of the plant's innermost capacity for reproduction would not be allowed were we to respect that, at minimum, respect this basic feature of vegetal life.
Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to help us be a little more thoughtful today.
Yes, thank you very much for having this wonderful conversation with me.
Michael Marder is a professor of philosophy at the University of the Basque Country, Vitoria-Gasteiz, in Spain, and the author of a number of books, including The Philosopher's Plant, An Intellectual Herbarium, and he co-authored this year Through Vegetal Being, Two Philosophical Perspectives. We'll put a link to some of his writings up on our website. I have a potted maidenhair fern at home that can complete a Sudoku, but only if it's on a medium level. If it's any harder, it just packs it in. You're listening to Blueprint for Living here on RN with me, Michael Williams.